sustaining alive, sustaining alive. Ah, 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 sustaining alive.
Sustaining alive on 95 BFM.
Rita Steele.
Hello.
How's it?
Good. How are you?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I see people have been kicking up a bit of a fuss about this super efficient cow paddock somewhere down in the middle of
Ashburton.
Yep. Ashburton. There you go.
Yeah, it's not just one, but that one is the largest one in the country, so it has received a lot of attention in the media.
Bit of a sort of American style fatten them up paddock.
Yeah.
I think so. Everyone's a bit shocked because they've flown a drone over it, and then
my
you
meat
get to,
is everything I eat is totally sweet, surely.
Then you see the conditions that the animals, you know, I'm sure physically they're not too bad, but it's not really a natural environment for them to be cruising around in, is it?
No, not at all. And
how natural are cows anyway? Like, they're not in their natural environment ever, I don't think. What's a cow look like?
What is a cow's natural environment?
Fuck knows, actually.
In the wild.
Probably a sea creature. Who knows? It's humans, eh?
The modern cow, how get different is that from bastard. The old, the ancient well, cow?
I tell you, chickens look very different. If you look at the chickens from back in the day to the chickens now, it's like fatty boomsticks. Big change.
They've got a name, those ones, and they're in the wild in America. They're really cool, actually. They're cool looking.
Yeah, they look way more velociraptory.
Yeah, you would not tack one of those ones on. But let's take a step back, because I think there's probably people out there going, what? So this week in the news, there has been a ton of controversy over New Zealand's largest feedlot. So if you haven't seen it, think America, think thousands of cows that look like ants on the ground.
Think about also how much meat that you eat per week.
This is a very good point.
And then consider why it is.
Yeah. And just to give some kind of background to it, there is quite a few of these in New Zealand. The one that's been in the news has 19,000 cows.
That must sort of deplete and then go back up every once in a while when we have a cup of snacks.
Yeah, I guess they've got an in-out policy that's probably tightly operated. Apparently they go in there at 18 months, so they have a free-range life, which I just think is even worse. It's like, hey, this is what your life was, and then this is what it is now.
But sometimes I look at cows and I'm like, if you guys got your act together, you could just bowl that fence over and gap it.
But they do it, but then they shoot them.
Do you know what would happen? They'd do it, and then they just start eating the grass on the other side of the fence. That's what would happen. So it's like,
there's actually, I'm on a like farm page.
Okay.
Yeah, on Facebook, and I watch some of the farms.
Tell me more about this farm page.
That was not
sounds lush.
But they do sometimes have little story like, oh my god, look what the cow did today, and it's like the cow's thought about it for weeks and weeks and weeks and
gone,
fuck
time.
It, today
it's got nothing
is
but time.
The day. So they bring them on at about 18 months after living a free-range life, and then they squish them into these tiny paddocks, and then they fatten them up. So
how long till I can? They're delicious.
250 days, and they double
in
size.
That's quite a long time.
Yeah, I think Johnny was saying that there are feedlots that do it for a shorter time, but in 250 days they can double their size, which that's a lot. That's a lot. Imagine that.
So, do we know where the grain comes from? Because we don't grow a lot of grain in New Zealand. So, is this an import?
I'm just going to flag this with saying, before we get a whole lot of texts from people that know farmers, not all feedlots are the same. There are some that are okay, and there are some positives to feedlots. So the biggest positive is that they're fed on concrete pads usually, which means that we can actually capture the waste and deal with it kind of in a way that's sort of all right. But that's not the case with all of them. The other thing is that we don't fertilise the ground because it's mud or concrete, and we bring in food, like Johnny has just mentioned. So we import the food. It's usually palm kernel. So in New Zealand, there is other things as well, but the big one that's the kind of the most horrific is palm or kernel. New Zealand is the largest single buyer of palm kernel in the world, and
cool,
we know what can't. I'm pretty sure we've covered palm kernel, but it is the
sounds like an orangutan's best friend.
Exactly. So it's the cause of the extinction of elephants, orangutans, birds, tigers in Indonesia. It's also the cause of 700 land conflicts that we know about in Indonesia alone, and palm oil, what are they, palm trees?
Yes,
they're not palm,
palm trees,
whatever they are, now cover the size of New Zealand, which was once rainforest. So it's not great. And what we need to think about when we're thinking about the fact that we feed them that, anything that you bring onto the land has got to come off. So only 15% of what you feed to a cow actually ends up as cow. So, like, it's getting fat.
it's getting fat.
And then the other 85% is pure waste. And that's got to go somewhere, not in your mouth. So that was the conversation about what happens in the tummies. And it's just...
So cows aren't trying hard enough. I think that's what we're getting at here.
Yeah.
Cows kind of aren't trying hard enough.
Well, you'd think with four stomachs, it's like sorted out.
Come on, Dave. Maybe just try a bit harder.
But their stomachs aren't made for grain like that. They're actually made to eat lots of different things. They're grazers, so they like to eat not just grass. That's why actually feeding them grass is pretty sad too.
They actually like
to eat a little bit of everything.
Wasn't Jesus' plan.
Wasn't his plan for these cows.
I don't think so. It's too acidic for their stomach, so they're living with heartburn constantly. Their stomachs get foamy, and it's not a pleasant place for them. Mm. And the thing that I'd like to point out about, you know, these externalities, because all this poo and wee, which is really high and like,
let's just call it excrement.
Thank you.
And
effluent, something like
that.
That's
better.
That's effluent.
Better.
That makes it sound a little better.
That's better.
Has to go somewhere. So it either goes into groundwater, or gets run off.
Definitely effluent, actually.
Effluent. Yeah. That's the official term.
It's better.
And there's 19,000 of these cows on this one farm, and a cow's waste is equivalent of 14 people. Each cow.
Wow.
So I did the numbers because I have a calculator.
That's great.
That's 266,000 people that the equivalent waste that this one farm's making.
Whoa.
Yeah, and so that's like about the size of Wellington.
Cup dumps.
And then all of a sudden you start going, well, hang on a second. Wellington has two massive sewage systems in play. It's treatment
plants. To take care of the shit that goes out to the
water. Millions and millions of dollars on treatment. And these guys have some ponds. Like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, it's a little bit depressing. It's also not great for our clean green image, as far as I'm concerned.
Wasn't green at all, actually. An aerial view will show that it's quite brown.
Brown. Very brown.
Quite brown.
Very brown. It's just simply overstocking land. It's that simple. We're overstocking land, and that waste has to go somewhere. So, Johnny's looking very depressed.
I'm thinking there's so many issues at play here. We kind of talked about this off air a tiny little bit, because at the end of the day, they are producing like a premium beef product, which has a high dollar value attached to it. But most of it goes overseas because the local economy can't even afford what they're producing down in Ashburton. There's many strange factors at play here. Like, why do we adopt an American style of farming?
The horrific irony is we're selling that meat off the back of our clean green image.
Totally.
And they're coming off a shat-ass brown farm.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, totally.
WTF.
And from what I understand, also positioning it as free range, because they do get to still go outside and people see it and they go, oh, New Zealand beef. Yeah, and like I say, it's not just, I think it's fair, if we're going to look at some solutions, I think it's fair to say that this can be done in a way that doesn't put 19,000 cows in one place. You
who,
know,
owns,
maybe,
who owns this farm?
The Japanese.
Thank you, I didn't
the whole
know
country, Japan owns the farm. Are you fucking serious? What?
Yes.
The Japanese government owns that farm.
A Japanese company owns it, ANZCO.
Okay. What is it called?
Oh, God, Johnny knows this stuff.
ANZCO?
Yes.
Okay. So we're Texas asked.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you for that. I didn't look into that. So, on a more positive note...
I'm glad we managed to hone it in.
Yeah.
Out of of Japan.
We see this come up all the time in the environment, but it makes us lots of money. But it's like, okay, but what's it costing us to clean that up?
Mm.
Because if we're making, I don't know, let's just say, you know, they're making $1 million and that's coming back into the local economy, although it won't be because if it's owned overseas, the profits go overseas, but that's another story.
Mm.
But still, if it's worth that much money to us and then we're having to spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands cleaning up the waterways, if not millions, then what's the point? Like, there's a scientific study that was done a couple of years ago by two freshwater economists, and they said that our dairy farming industry was costing $10 million in environmental externalities. Sorry, $10 billion. And I think it's worth to us $11 billion. So it's like, actually, it's not really worth the correct... Like, we're not looking at this properly. We're putting the costs of the environmental degradation onto the public while people are profiting privately. That got very deep very quickly. But that is what's
happening.
So
it does cite the need for a massive rebrand in this country of, like, what our priorities are and where we want to be.
And who we want to be. We need, leadership in that respect,
and just, like, fuck little terms, sustainable growth and stuff like that. It's like, it just doesn't really work like that. You just got to...
Yeah, I mean, I think we can grow sustainably, but it means understanding the areas where we can grow.
We can't, though. You can't keep growing sustainably. There's at a point where the world's like, there's too many people.
There's too many people.
Ultimately, if I was actually hoping we'd touch on that at some point. Do you think maybe we talk about the people problem next?
Yeah, it is a big one. I know it's been on your radar for a while.
Well,
so
the world's got to hit like a point where we go, okay, we can't keep going.
Yeah, yeah. We hit it, but we will.
I don't think we have just yet. I think we're definitely close. For people-wise, numbers-wise.
Yeah, numbers-wise, yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of countries in the world that have, like, a population control systems in place, in a sense that they push contraception and stuff a lot further. There's ways to go about it that aren't, like, 1984 kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
Yeah, I'd be interested if we'll talk about
that.
We'll
cover
week.
We can cover. We'll definitely cover it next week.
Sweet.
If there's something that we want to do now, okay, so the easiest thing to do, obviously, is cut back your eating of meat, and I think I rattle on about this enough, because meat is a really unsustainable thing to eat nightly or daily. I met someone the other day that said that they eat meat 3 meals a day, and I was like, oh my God, like, no, that's so bad for you.
Were they just a head on the floor?
Totally. That's a big... just, like, driving around in one of those, like, machines. Just think about it for your health, for your wallet, for the environment. And then the big one is that councils just need an overhaul. Like, what they keep going on about is that this is legitimate, like, business. Like, the councils have approved this. There's been resource consents. They've passed their resource consents. And that just screams to me that the system isn't working because, you know, what we're seeing is different rules in different cities. So there's no way that you could...
Are you calling corruption on this one, Rita? Sounds like you're calling corruption on this a little bit.
I'm calling... nepotism, for sure.
Okay.
So,
cream, get the money, dollar bill, y'all, cash rules everything around me.
Yeah. Anyone who's gone through the resource consent process knows that it's just how much money you throw at it. They will say yes to you, just keep going back, you know. And then there's different rules in different cities. So you've got farmers sitting on council, you know, because actually that's all there is. Like, if you're in a small town, that's what you do for a job, and then you go on council.
I trust Grant. So. He's had that station for 20 fucking years. I'm going to vote for him, he said.
Totally.
Yeah.
And also,
sorry,
just
Grant,
thinking,
if you're listening, you're all right, mate.
Just thinking, sorry, Grant. And also, just thinking about how rough this is for mum and dad farmers, like your small family farms that are doing everything they can to fix their waterways and be like the best possible farmers they can with their 200 cows.
Yeah.
When the fuckers down the road have got, you know, hundreds of cows a year, hundreds of thousands of cows a year.
Shitty cows.
Don't blame the cows, man. I feel sorry for them. So it's just really stink for those guys trying to do the right thing. We need some central leadership on this. I think we need the government. Like, hey, Jacinda, put down the baby. Come and help us out with this. I think someone needs to... No, sorry, Clark's got the baby. It's fine. I think we need leadership at that level to say what we want to be as a country and where we want to see ourselves, I think, and start developing that stuff.
A shift in policy a general shift in mentality of, like, what we're trying to achieve.
Totally.
Like, is this a long game? Yes, it's great to have a buoyant export economy, but...
I don't know how much of a fact this is, but...
At some point,
cost?
We need to, you know, check the costs.
Totally.
And see, I mean, like, you know, what quality of life do the local people have? Why do we need to be servicing an export economy that will pay more for it? You know, maybe we can do something slightly better and cheaper and keep it more local.
Yeah, totally. Bring back local butchers and you know, buying a beast for, you know, between you and your neighbour and putting it in the freezer for the year. And I also think that the New Zealand meat market that's not selling these sorts of cows needs to step up. Like, one of the complaints I've had from chefs is that there's not a lot of traceability on meat. Mm. And this farm in particular is really good at that. You know, like they can provide that traceability, and that's excellent. So maybe it's just a time for the other farms to step up. And I think it's actually at the abattoir level that we're losing that traceability. Mm. So, you know, things like maybe CCTV, like chips, I don't know how we do it, but we've got to improve that traceability too.
Cow chips.
Something.
Sounds delicious.
Something. Cow chips. Oh, God.
A couple of cow chips.
All right, Rita. Thank you very much.
Somebody sticks it in. A cow in Israel produces 6 times as much milk as a Kiwi cow.
A cow?
As a New Zealand Kiwi cow.
No, have but what was the them? Original cow?
There's massive Kiwis, and they've managed to breed a rare Kiwi with a cow. And it's complex.
Mammal.
It's like a bird mammal.
That was Sustainin' Alive on 95 BFM.